The talk is called, if you didn't see the email, Your Emotional Untruth. We sort of think of our emotions as kind of the rock bottom truth of our psyche. And tonight I'm going to kind of challenge that. And this is in no way to encourage you to have some kind of aversive relationship with your emotions. We actually have to fully allow our emotions more than we normally do to actually get this insight that the thing we take to be so true, our emotional life, is not necessarily true. So when we're really wise, we have a wise and loving relationship with our emotional life, you can boil it down to this little thing. Usually what we need to do more to come into balance with our emotions is accept them more and believe them less. So think of an emotion you've had recently: anger, fear, sadness, joy, love, compassion. Just bring it to mind and just accept it more. Really allow it. And believe it less. You can fully allow the emotion to be here. That's what we're accepting. But it's the thoughts that usually hook us because we believe them to be true. So this talk is part of a series on working with thinking mind. And when we really wake up to thinking mind with mindfulness, we understand that our thoughts are never really true. They can have a grain of truth. Here's an example. How was your sit? You know, just notice what thoughts in your mind. And does someone want to say just a phrase or a sentence? How was your sit? This one just now.
Sleepy.
Mm-hmm. What else?
I was feeling a little selfish.
Selfish?
There's something right going on in my life that I really want to think about right now, and so I was kind of using it as a time to involve myself with that, so I kept having to come back, trying to put that aside.
And so if you say, well, the sit was selfish, you also said it was more than that, because you said you had to keep coming back, so that was happening too. It was a good sit, it was a bad sit, it was a sleepy sit, it was a distracted sit. It's like, moment to moment, that wasn't true. There might have been moments of that. And usually what our thinking mind does is we take whatever's most intense and we characterize our experience with that. But our experience is myriad. In just 30 minutes, the mind goes all over the place. We have all kinds of experiences. But we simplify things. And so even this is an untruth to call it a sit, like a meditation, you know, like it was a noun, right? When really all it was change, right? The whole thing was a process and you kept changing. So even to call it a meditation, a sit, is already not true. This part of this series has been looking into the many, many ways our thoughts are getting it wrong all day long. We did one thing where I brought an orange, and we tried to figure out what an orange is, and we couldn't find that. You can't find the essence of orange. It's not a singular, unchanging, independent thing like the word orange implies. It's a process. It used to be a flower and then it became a fruit. It would rot, and it's not independent. It comes from a tree and the sun, soil, water, and air. There's no essence in orange. And orange is the stand-in for all of the objects that we reify, and we impute this essence. And we think, you know, and physics debunked this, you know, 100 years ago. Our model of reality is there's a ball and a ball, and then this ball is with force acts on this ball. We have independent objects, and then with these forces or actions between. And that's all not true materially. So our thoughts are getting it wrong all day long. There's thousands of ways we can notice our thoughts being limited and not true. So we're simply, in this series and in our practice, waking up to thinking mind. And notice I'm not saying getting rid of thinking mind. The stereotype of meditation is I've got to quiet the mind and get rid of the thoughts. So it leads to all kinds of Buddhist jokes, you know. What's a Buddhist compliment? I've never met anybody so thoughtless in my life. Or a Buddhist birthday card, not thinking of you. Or two monks sitting next to each other in the meditation hall, and one of them whispering to the other, are you not thinking what I'm not thinking? Again, that's this kind of like misunderstanding of what mindfulness is. We're not trying to get rid of thinking. We want to wake up to it so it doesn't rule us. Thinking is wonderful when it's serving us, meaning we're aware of it, and then we have choice around what thoughts to act on and what not to. Then our thinking mind is this amazing thing where we can symbolize reality with words in our mind and plan a great surprise birthday party for your mom's 80th birthday. Like, how cool is that? You can do that with thinking mind. Thinking mind can be very useful when we're aware of it and we're not compulsively following every little edict in our thoughts. So how many were you who were here when I did the guiding? Could you raise your hands again if you're aware of thoughts? You actually notice thoughts? Sweet. Okay, so I love teaching this series because I believe the most life-changing insight you can have is, oh my God, I'm not my thoughts. And I remember first having that on my first 10-day retreat. It wasn't until about day 7. I didn't really have the insight that maybe you just had. If you can be aware of your thoughts, you're not your thoughts. You're bigger than your thoughts. The awareness of thoughts is also happening. But when we get it that our thinking mind is just thinking, we understand it's not the real world. So when we really understand this, a lot of things change. We get thinking mind in a perspective where we can use it rather than it using us. So let's pretend that your thoughts could be true. And they can't. They can't be true in any ultimate sense because they're always symbolizing reality. They're attempting to symbolize reality, which always is going to have a viewpoint. So already, your thoughts can't capture reality perfectly. And there's a saying in Taoism, the Tao that can be spoken is not the true Tao. We can't capture reality with thoughts. It's experiential. We can experience it. But thinking mind doesn't do it. But let's pretend your thoughts could be true. When you don't understand that thinking mind is just an activity that's happening in your experience, But you mistake the thought worlds for the real world, then you can really afflict yourself with your thoughts. A prime example being, you know, the thought that something along the lines, what's wrong with me? You know, some kind of shame-based or unworthy thought. So let's just do a little thought experiment, and I'll come back to that. So if you would, think of a country. Keep that country in mind for a little bit. Notice what images or thoughts are coming up in your mind when you think of this country. And now let's all together switch countries and all think about Belgium. What comes to mind? What images or thoughts? And then we can just now just share. When I say Belgium, what comes to your mind? What do you notice?
Chocolate.
Chocolate.
Specifically, that really good waffle with chocolate dribbled over it. You know, they don't have regular waffles.
The Belgian waffle.
Okay. The Belgian waffle from IHOP.
The actual Belgian waffle. I thought of the movie In Bruges, which is kind of a sick, very funny movie. So what was the first country you thought about?
Panama.
So what happened to Panama when you thought of Belgium?
Well, it just kind of disappeared.
Yeah, absolutely.
I could visualize the country, and then Belgium kind of, you know, the other country kind of swooped over it. So it was still there, but it was covered over.
Oh, okay.
India.
And what happened to India when you started thinking about Belgium?
It kind of came and went. So I started thinking of Belgium and started thinking of how they were different.
Okay, so you were doing a little back and forth.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. India is there, whatever India is, right? Whatever you think of when you think of India, it's somewhere over there. But in the thought world, the minute you switch from India to Belgium or Panama to Belgium, India's gone. Now this is just, it sounds sort of like, duh, but actually this is huge. If we go back now to unworthiness, if that thought could be true, and it can't because it's a thought, if it could be true, it's only true when you're thinking it. The minute you think about Belgium, you're not unworthy. It's bullshit because it's a thought. So there's a lot of, we can free a lot of mental energy when we simply wake up to the fact that thoughts are happening. Let's do one more little kind of thought experiment. Okay, if you would, close your eyes and remember the last time you were sort of angry or peeved or irritated. And if you would, really let yourself have the thoughts. Don't edit the thoughts. Really allow them, just so you can become aware of them. Okay, hopefully that was long enough. Now, at what are you mad? You are mad at a thought. That situation that happened is gone. Even if it's an ongoing situation, that exact memory is gone. So someone did something once, you've replayed it 112 times. Where's the easiest place to make a difference, to make a change? Right here. You know, when something's really bothering us, that's when we replay it a lot. And this is not to judge that we do that, but it's to understand the truth of it. The truth is somebody did something once, and it's now afflicting us, and that's ours. What they did might have been unconscious, unintentional, we don't know. But we received it as something threatening or insulting or offending or whatever. And because of who we are, it's a big problem or issue in our minds. But that's just ours. It's not even about the other person. If we want to know what was going on with the other person, we need to find out. We need to ask. But if we're making assumptions, then actually we're really causing ourselves difficulty. You're recognizing something. Like, I'll leave it alone. Okay, so what I'm basically just trying to say here is we free up a lot of energy and we become much kinder to ourselves when we get it that the thinking world is not the real world. In the real world, Belgium kind of just stays there as whatever Belgium is. In the thought world, Belgium has been gone for 5 minutes probably, because we're not thinking about it anymore. So we gain a lot of freedom when we have this insight, I'm not my thoughts. So now I kind of want to apply it all to working with emotions. Because working with emotions is when we most believe our thoughts. It's the hardest place for us to actually wake up to the thoughts that are running our experience. So we can kind of get it, you know. It's not so hard to get it that this body is not me. You know, I had knee surgery, but, you know, if it was really bad, I could get knee replacement like my dad just did. I could get heart replacement, lung replacement, you know. So we can kind of get it that the body isn't us. We can wake up to thinking and get it that, oh, these thoughts are not me. Did anyone have the experience like I was kind of suggesting? Let the thoughts just think themselves. Was anyone a little bit? If you're really mindful of thinking, what you'll notice is that thoughts just sort of pinball off each other. A little bit like this. I'm going to say a word, and when I say this word, notice what word pops up in your mind, okay? You ready? Marco. What word popped up in your mind? G-Y. Because there's a little mini-me in there thinking, he said Marco. What would be the appropriate word to put here? Orangutan? No. You know, jealousy? No. Box? No. Wall? No. Right? Oh, polo. I'll say polo. Because I remember I used to play that game, blah, blah, blah. Right? That didn't happen, right? The minute I said Marco, boom, polo happens. Who did that? Who did that?
Conditioning habit.
Conditioning habit. Exactly. You know, if you were from China and I said Marco, maybe that's not a game they play in pools in China. I don't know. You know, you would have thought, oh, the guy that came over and ripped off spaghetti from us because we invented noodles long before the Italians had it. Who knows what a Chinese person would say. So the point is thoughts can think themselves through this incredible association organ called the brain. Our brain associates things like that all day long. Thoughts can think themselves. There doesn't need to be a me here for thinking to happen. It's sort of spooky. So we can wake up to this and actually not identify with our thoughts. The hardest thing to not identify with is when our thoughts have tripped into an emotional space, just like you were saying, Richard. So emotions are basically thoughts that are strong enough usually to have a charge in the body, some kind of sensation in the body, right? And that charge is a result of our identification. It both caused by the identification with a thought and reinforces identification with the thought. So we really lose it when we get emotional. We lose this perspective of knowing something's happening. So that's really what I'm going to address from now on. So our emotions are, of course, super important, right? They form the our meaning in life. They form our ability to connect, to be happy, to be passionate, engaged. And they motivate us. We're often not motivated to work in an emotional state. So all of that is kind of the helpful side of emotions. And we all know the unhelpful side. We get afflicted by them. Shame, guilt, sadness, fear, anger, jealousy, irritation, aversion. And we kind of think of these as our truths when they happen. They feel like the truth because we're so invested in them when they happen. But I'm going to challenge us to actually hold them as our emotional untruth, just to kind of counterbalance what we usually do. With clear seeing, with mindfulness, we recognize that emotions are changeable, they're conditioned, they're impersonal. And when we realize this, actually it's very freeing. So when we actually wake up to emotions and see them clearly, I just kind of want to now just talk about what we see. So the first thing we notice is that our emotions come sort of unbidden. So just like I said Marco, you said Polo. You know, when someone says something that you're in your world, it lands as insulting. You know, what's the likely emotion you're going to feel? Anger. Now, do you do that little thing? Does the little mini me inside kind of say, he just called me a no good, blah, blah, blah. What's the appropriate emotion here? Is it guilt? Is it wonder? Is it love? Is it joy? You know, oh no, I think anger would be the appropriate one. So, okay, here I go. Usually what happens is we're just angry. And what's causing the anger, since it wasn't a volitional or conscious choice, is our habits, just like habits caused Polo after Marco. You go in the bank line and you've got to get somewhere fast, and at 10 a.m., you've never had this before, but there's like six people in line and one teller. You know, you don't cast about for what's the proper reactive emotion. You just feel impatient or stressed. So our emotions come about due to our mental habits. They're conditioned. I'll give you one example. When I was on the retreat once, I had a whole thought chain that ended up in feeling unworthy. I feel bad about myself. There was a click on the wall of the thermostat that reminded me of a plucked bass string, so I went into some kind of jazz, you know, just incredibly rich, beautiful jazz, because I was on retreat, so my mind was quiet, and then I went, infant bliss. Just like a little baby in bliss. And then the next thought was my godson, Luca. And then the next thought was the time I dropped him and he hit his head. And I dropped him because I wasn't paying well enough attention when I set him down. I didn't drop him, but he sort of toppled in his car seat. He loved to sit in the car seat in the house as a one-year-old. And he fell and hit his head. I was thinking I was going to kind of go into the kitchen. I remember there was cookies in there. I wanted a cookie. So the next thought was, like, you know, what an unworthy person. I don't think those were the exact words, but because of my greed, I just caused this little trauma to this my little one-year-old godson. So where did that unworthiness come from? A click on the wall. If I wasn't mindful in tracking my experience, I would take that unworthiness to be some kind of truth about myself. We tend to take that one very seriously. We can let go of a lot, but something's wrong with me is a hard one to let go on. It really hooks us. But the mindfulness was strong enough for me to see that was a conditioned, impersonal arising due to conditions, due to this incredible association organ. Click, jazz, bliss, infant, Luca, dropping him because of greed, worthless piece of crap. That was the thought train. Why would I take any of that to be true? It's just the mind unfolding due to conditions. Thoughts thinking themselves. So this is the first thing we really need to get. Our emotions arise impersonally due to conditions. And really what's happening in all of this is that our thoughts are creating emotions based on certain things happening. Our thoughts stumble us into emotions, and then once we finally land on an emotion, then we just kind of stay there. So then what happens, once we're in an emotional state, then we really grab the thoughts inside that state and believe them to be very true. So thoughts create emotions. And then once the emotion is there, we grab the thoughts even more. So Anais Nin said, we don't see the world as it is, we see it as we are. Read as we feel. So when we get an emotion, that emotion, the charge of it psychically makes us really identify with it, and we just really grab onto the thoughts inside the emotion and really believe them to be true. So in working with depressed clients, I usually present a little model to them that they find helpful. So when you're dealing with depression, you know, where that you just sort of lose hope, or there's a loss of self-esteem, or maybe a loss of interest or pleasure in the world, it's sort of like you fall into kind of a hole. And then the thoughts you think inside the hole, all you can see is the hole. So to you, the whole world looks black. This would be true for grief or sadness, right? You know the Rolling Stones song, Painted Black, you know? I see a red door and I want it painted black. Like, that's the only thing that makes sense when you're grief-stricken or depressed or sad. Well, when you come out of those negative, difficult feelings, you have a whole another cognitive world. Your mind actually sees all kinds of other things. So it's like there's a park, and the park is full of many things. There's beautiful flowers, there's children playing, there's people doing sports, there's dog poop, you know, you don't want to step in. You know, there's unpleasant things. There's pleasant things, but there's a whole world of experience. But inside the park, you fall into a hole. And you don't realize that there's just a hole in a park. You think the world is the hole. You lose complete sight. You cognitively don't have access to the rest of your life when you're in those really dark emotions. When the emotions release, you have access suddenly to the rest of your life. So what happens with a difficult emotion is We just can only see the world as a reflection of the state we're in. We don't see the world as it is. We see it as we feel. Do we know this? So there's no truth to those thoughts. It's just a whole. Don't think the whole is the world. You're actually just seeing your own mind. So we grab onto the thoughts, we take the thoughts to be the truth about the world. And actually, anatomically or physiologically, what's happening is the amygdala inside the brain, middle of the brain, almond-sized organ, its job is to prevent our neuronal access to front brain, where we have the rest of our life stored. We have our kind of discriminating thinking and awareness up here. Amygdala keeps us in lower brain, reptilian brain, fight, flight. Evolutionarily, it served a purpose. We don't want to be thinking a lot of fancy thoughts if a tiger is like running towards us, right? We just want to think run or fight. You know, that's about it. So we are literally in brain sprain in a difficult state. We don't have access to the cognition to remember there's a whole world of good things and possibility when we're caught in a difficult state. So with mindfulness, if you accept depression, sadness, grief more, and believe it less, then what happens is you actually let the energy of that metabolize, and then it loses its charge, and then the amygdala actually stops perceiving threat and releases. And then we have access to frontal cortex. And then we can see all the other possibilities in the world. So the worst time to believe your thoughts, they can't be true. But even if they could be true, they're only true if we're thinking them. So we've got all that. But even beyond that, if you were to just believe your thoughts, the worst time to do it is in the grips of a difficult emotion, because you will only see the world in really simple, stark, negative terms. So this is where mindfulness is a true ally. We can stop. We can just feel what it's like to be sad, actually. You know, what's it like in the body especially? We stay with it, we know those thoughts. Those thoughts really want us to be true. I'll never recover. You know, I remember when a girlfriend broke up with me in my 30s, I just thought, I'll never find someone as good for me as she was. Not. I mean, it probably took me about 9 months to disbelieve that thought. But we really believe our thoughts in a negative state because there's so much centrifugal force, so much psychic energy, like magnetically pulled into the thought, the emotion. But it is the worst time to believe your thoughts because of brain sprain. We don't have access to our whole brain when you're really sad, really depressed, really anxious, really grief-stricken, really angry. You know, can really help to just say, brain sprain, amygdala talking, let me just be mindful. I'll keep being mindful. And eventually, the state metabolizes, and then you come to more possibility. You start seeing the park again. There's now a whole world outside of your projection. Okay. It's sort of like this. Here's a poem called Afraid So by Jean Marie Beaumont. Is it starting to rain? Did the check bounce? Are we out of coffee? Is this going to hurt? Could you lose your job? Did the glass break? Was the baggage misrouted? Will this go on my record? Are you missing much money? Was anyone injured? Is the traffic heavy? Do I have to remove my clothes? Will it leave a scar? Must you go? Will this be in the papers? Is my time up already? Will it affect my eyesight? Did all the books burn? Are you still smoking? Is the bone broken? Will I have to put him to sleep? Was the car totaled? Am I responsible for these charges? Are you contagious? Will we have to wait long? Is the runway icy? Was the gun loaded? Could this cause side effects? Do you know who betrayed you? Is the wound infected? Are we lost? Can it get any worse? Okay, you could also title that poem, Amygdala Talking. That's just anxious energy looking for a place to land, right? Those questions are not about the world, exactly. They're really about, can I be reassured? That's the real question. It's anxiety projecting itself out. Again, we're not seeing the world as it is, we're seeing it as we feel. So these are two main insights we have. We watch emotions arise impersonally due to conditions, due to thought association. And then the second insight is we really, the centrifugal force of our negative states lock us into thinking and believing our thoughts when it's the worst time to believe our thoughts because of brain sprain. So mindfulness with your tough stuff. Mindfulness is the remedy. Kind mindfulness, understanding mindfulness with your fear, anger, jealousy, sadness. That unlocks the brain. So these are kind of the primary insights. I want to just say a few more and then I'm going to invite your input. Your emotional truth, it's wise to say it's my truth of the moment. Have you ever noticed it? You see something one way when you're really pissed about it, but then when you relax and you finally like metabolize the anger, maybe there's a kernel of truth in the anger. We you know, often there is information we need with anger. But it's usually the information we need is usually about us. We think it's about the other person. But we can just flip and our truth can change completely. We can see the same thing so differently depending on what emotions are causing your brain to pick up what sticks. We see things very differently depending on our emotions about it. And our truths can change quickly. So that's an insight we have. It might feel like your truth, but please say to yourself, this is the truth of this moment, or this is the truth of this sadness. It's not the truth about the world. And our truths change. Another thing we can notice with our emotional life and the way that our emotions are not true. We can feel very judgmental of other people when they threaten us. They hurt us. They thwart us, they threaten us, and we can become very judgmental of them. That judgmentalism is going to be very off base about the reality of the other person. It usually is coming because there's something inside we don't want to feel. And this is, we defend against those feelings by being really judgmental about somebody else and assuming we know what they're up to. And as a dear person in my life used to say, the more mindful I become, the fewer assholes there are in the world and the more hurt feelings I have. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
We drop thinking we know the truth about the other person because we can actually handle the vulnerability that they stimulated. They don't cause it, but they trigger it inside of us. So this is one way our emotional life, like being really judgmental, is really not very true or reliable, our judgments of others. Mostly we're protecting against what's vulnerable in us. Again, mindfulness is the solution because if we can open to the vulnerability, we can take care of that. And then we might need to address the situation with the person. If they step on our toes, we need to say, ouch. And we need to, you know, be clear about our boundaries. But we don't have to do it with aggression. We do it with clarity, from clarity. Because we've allowed, really, maybe the horror of allowing yourself to feel hurt or scared or unworthy even. I'll just end with this. In short, when we become mindful of our thoughts and by extension our emotions, then we have a choice. What emotions do you want and thoughts do you want to put your energy behind? Yeah, I want to do more of this. And what do you want to abandon? What do you want to let go of? It's not even a question until you're mindful. But once you're mindful, then you start to be not used by your thoughts, but you start to use your thoughts to serve what you really want. What you really want in life becomes something that you organize around. Please.
Would you be willing to explain the thing again? I was kind of spacing out about the when you're not using your whole brain, when you're kind of down in the hole, the amygdala kind of kicks in and you're sort of locked in a limited thinking.
Yeah. Well, we only really have, because of the amygdala being activated by threat, when we perceive threat, the amygdala comes on board. And we really only have access to our lower brain, which tends to be fight, flight. Tends to be very primitive, simple, black and white thinking. So that's the worst time to believe your thoughts. When your thoughts have the strongest pull on you, it's the worst time to believe them because of what the amygdala has done to your brain.
So that's what's happening to a person when they're in like a state of depression?
Uh-huh. Depression, sadness, strong. You know, maybe, I mean, I'm not a neuroscientist, so I don't know exactly all that, but generally this is what happens when the brain is in a negative state.
It's been another question. So, as in the example that you gave of the association chain,
yeah,
that eventually led to the, you know, very negative sort of core belief, I mean, that's... Since it's often the case, it seems it's no coincidence that those kind of seemingly random associations typically end up there, basically at our core belief, basically. And so I was thinking in terms of the effectiveness, or like you mentioned, you know, mindfulness being an ally, not only in an instance of that happening or identification with thought or emotion, but also the potential of that, like, over time to gradually, you know, through that process, to gradually decondition core beliefs like that, basically.
Yes.
Sort of cumulatively over time.
Yes. So, just for the mic, the question is a little bit, so mindfulness doesn't just work in the moment to deal with a difficult state, but over time, doesn't it kind of purify that tendency in the mind, especially like our kind of core difficult emotions? Did I get it? Yes. So let's just take the example of unworthiness. If you watch how you do that, you know, we so believe that one that it can take a lot of time or help to really be able to just see that as a thought. But when you do, you start to notice there's a specific situation, something happened, and I take that, and maybe I made a mistake, but it's like the punctuation I put on the end of the sentence is, something's wrong with me. That just proves that something's wrong with me. And what did I do? You know, I maybe, you know, was a little abrupt with my child or something. And then, but so with mindfulness, what happens is you start seeing over time, oh, that's voodoo. That's just a thought. What is that thought, something's wrong with me, have anything to do with the actual situation? You're divorced from the situation. You're not even seeing the situation. You're just going into this global negative place. So it does purify our afflictive states. Yes, the answer is yes, but that's just an example of how it might. But it also does, we just, things lose their charge over time, you know, in general with something. So if you're sad about something, the more you allow the sadness, the more it metabolizes, eventually you let go. That's why grieving works. Grieving is the way we let go. Please.
What's grieving then? Is it admitting the pain of the situation?
Yes. It's
allowing it.
It's admitting the loss. There's a loss.
Without a conclusion,
yes.
Necessarily.
What we often do with grief is we then personalize it and go into what's wrong with me. That's not grief. The grief is acknowledging the loss without any self-reference to something being wrong here. There's a genuine loss. And we can just feel really sad about our loss. And even feel good about ourselves in our sadness or grief. Last one, and then we'll take a break.
So one of the things that I still am working with is this idea that we don't have to figure it out. Like, I don't have to necessarily figure out why the emotion's there, where it originated, what.
Exactly.
I want to figure it out.
Yes.
Know, I want to make sense of it and heal it. And I guess that's been a hard concept for me in Buddhism that, or with mindfulness, that all I have to do is pay attention to it and identify it. And I just wondered if you could say a little more about that, just a reminder.
Well, we want to figure things out so that we can control them, so that we'd never have to feel that again. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, more or less.
It makes sense why it's even there.
Yeah. It's unpleasant. We don't like it. If we can figure out what caused it, then we can avoid that thing. And, you know, when we have those really difficult places in us, it makes sense to do that. It's loving, and it's loving to do that. So yeah, we don't want to just only be mindful of everything. I mean, if we really could, if our lives allowed us to only be mindful, and we had a lot of time every day to meditate, then it can really work. But, you know, don't feel that I should never kind of go into figure it out mind, because sometimes it's really helpful and skillful, and we need to. And we often learn something else in addition to all the figuring out. We have a different kind of insight. You know, so I would say kind of both and. It can be really good to spend some time not figuring out, just be in the experience of it. Because the figuring out is a strain. It takes energy. And if we can, the more mindful we can be, the more we can handle our tough stuff, and then we don't have to control things so much because we're not so scared of our difficult states.